Talk to me about the future.
We've got lots coming up and lots to share with people.
We've got an EP on the way. It will be out this year. So that's, you know, big first for us.
You're saying, you know, what advice do you give someone who wants to make it? And like, you know, we always kind of sometimes we think that, you know, what, how do you define that? What is making it? And I think,
like, well, yeah, your version of success, whatever that is. Yeah,
exactly. Even if it's just like, you know, your first ever gig, like a pub gig with like five people in a room, you've made it. You're playing music to five people in a pub. Like, let's go. Like, do you know what I mean? Fucking do it.
You know, I used to have really bad stage fright, and you know, I think Joe and Eddie might be the same. I used to stand like straight like a stick. I always thought if I could do it, anyone can. You know, you just got to take a belief and you just got to let go, and then, you know, just do as best you can. And, you know, if you're passionate about it, the results will follow.
Yeah, we're Honey Badger. I'm Joe, I'm the drummer.
I'm Eddie, I'm a vocalist and guitarist.
Just a vocalist. He is the vocalist and the guitarist. And I am Luca, the bassist.
Guys, can I just firstly say that I listen to, like, I'd like to say I listen to a lot of, you know, under the radar music and stuff. The moment I heard you guys, your music just jumped out at me straight away, because I'm a big fan of artists like King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizards, Queens of the Stone Age, and not that you guys sound the same as them at all, but I was hearing a lot of that in the play, and it's just, it's rock music that's exciting, because there's so much rock music out there that's just, that's just not exciting, and it was doing loads for me. So talk to me about like when it all started out for you and how you sort of developed to get that sound, because it is such a standout sound.
That's very kind of you, mate. Cheers. It's been, because me and Eddie are brothers, actually. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah, Eddie got his guitar. How old were you when you got your guitar?
Six. At Christmas when I was six.
Yeah, it's probably like a Christmas present when he's six. And yeah, and then I picked up the drums probably a year later. I was a bit jealous, to be honest, that, you know, he could play an instrument. So I picked that up. And then we just like kind of would just jam. I had to play on Pans and Pots before I could actually have a drum kit. Yeah, and then we went to secondary school and we met Luca, our good friend, and we got him in on the bass. So it's been quite a while.
And how did those conversations come about with Luca when it was like, you know, do you want to join the band? Was it quite organic? Was it just Luca just went, oh guys, I play bass, and you were like, no shit, we're starting a band, we should do something? Did it happen that way, or Luca, did you see those two playing and were you like clawing at the door to get in the studio with them?
Well, I was kind of, but it started off, I was actually in another band at the time, so that was my first band. I'd only been in it a while, and I was very much like, you know, I'm sticking with the people that I was with before, they're my priority. You know, I will say, I always thought Honey Badger were cooler, you know, they're writing the cooler songs, you know what I mean? And so, you know, really, when it came down to it, when Joe asked me, it was, you know, it was basically like a yes. You know, to give some context, Eddie's 2 school years younger than us. So me and Joe, we like shared some classes, and I hadn't really met Eddie much at that point, but obviously I'd seen him play, and yeah, it was crazy. So Honey Badger actually started off as a secondary thing for me. And then what I soon realized is that, you know, we are driven and we're writing some sick songs, and my other band, you know, we weren't doing as well. So I sort of put that to one side and continued on with the lads. And yeah, it was always something that I wanted to do, but I'm just glad that it worked out that, you know, Honey Badger are my main band, and you know, yeah.
All I'm hearing, mate, is you were after the promotion. You were like, nah, this band's not cutting it. Let's go for the next band.
Let's not slag them off too much. But yeah. Honey Badger, they, do you know what I mean? They always had it. And it's funny, I remember joining, like, the boys suggesting maybe even changing the name. And I just thought, like, absolutely not. Because, I mean, you know, you brought up the sound. From a very early stage, it was raw. It was gritty. You know, it was always had that, you know, that punch to it. Eddie, you know, from the start had, like, some, you know, mad pedal board with, like, you know, big fuzz, you know, loads of really crunchy tones. And you know, it was just really, really heavy, which contrasted his voice at the time, which... It was super, super high pitched. I mean, when I joined, Eddie's voice hadn't even dropped. We've actually got some demo tapes where Eddie legitimately sounds like some sort of choir boy. It sounds like we've just picked up some kid and just got him to do some like.
It gets worse than that though, mate, because then you got to go through the whole, and Eddie, you know this, you got to go through the whole awkward stage of having voice breaks. You go through like a stage of a few years where it's the whole time and you're like, oh God, and you just got to find your feet again.
It weren't too bad, to be fair. I mean, Eddie, how did you find it?
It kind of worked sometimes if I was proper screaming or something. A little crack can't hurt, but there were times where it did stick out like a sore thumb, big.
Oh, well, you mentioned something interesting there, Eddie. And we're going to be jumping around all over the place to this podcast, by the way. It would be like sort of earlier days, current day, future, all over the place. And, you know, you talk about like you don't mind a few sort of squeals here and there. And I think in your live performances, there's a real beauty in like the imperfection of it. Like, you know, you've got your amazing studio sound where somehow you manage to contain all the chaos and, you know, the mix sounds great and you manage to produce it so it sounds smooth. But then, you know, I've been looking at some live videos of you and in between all the stops and everything, you've got feedback that starts to creep in and you've got the guitar squealing. But I think, you know, they're my favorite gigs. They're the gigs that you go to where no one performance is the same. Is that a big part of what you guys do?
I mean, yeah. We love the big screaming feedback sounds and especially between the songs, it helps if you've not got a lot to say in between or just have a big wall of sound to back you up. So yeah.
But I mean it's part of the Honey Badger sound, isn't it? There's something uncontrolled, like something trying to escape almost, you know what I mean? It's like it's really coming for you. And I think that, you know, the feedback just adds to that sort of vibe.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting the name Honey Badger as well. You mentioned that a moment ago, Luca, because honey badgers are like the most badass animals. I didn't even realise this. They're savage. They look all cute and then they're like no other animal fucks with them.
Yeah, man. Gotta be the best animal. Gotta be.
And that was the idea, right?
Yeah. I think actually we came up with it. Well, I mean, thing is, we turned up to our first gig. We didn't have a band name. They asked us what we wanted to be called and we were like, well, shit, we don't know. But we had actually watched like a YouTube video on the journey to the gig of a honey badger and we were like, they're just so cool. Like, let's just go with that.
So badass. So much cooler than like a fucking, I don't know, like a skunk or something like that. Like, they're just cool. In fact, skunk's actually a decent name for a band, but that's beside the point. Honey badger's sick. So, Eddie and Joe, chat to me about like the whole side of you two being brothers. Because I was in a band when I was younger. We probably stopped when I was like 19, 20. But it was me and my brother. I played guitar and I sang and my brother played bass and my mate played drums. So albeit we were on slightly different setups, but like it was a three piece, two brothers, a really close mate. And that's kind of how it worked. And how has you two being brothers shaped your sound as you've gone on?
Obviously, as we've grown up in the same household, our parents always playing us the music that we still listening to now. My dad actually puts me onto a lot of the new music coming out. I get most of my new stuff from him. So,
and it's good because being in a band with your brother, you can be more brutally honest.
Yeah.
Sometimes as well. So like, and that's the thing as well, Luca. Like we've grown up with Luca for quite a while now. It's like secondary school. Like we're kind of all brothers, and like we can all be really honest with each other. Like, which makes us really strong, I think. You know, if there's stuff that's not quite right about the song, we can say it to each other and we can fix it and we can make it better instead of kind of like keeping the peace. But like, it's all, you know, it's all love. But like, yeah, there are moments.
And you know what, it's not bad if there is like when I say argument, I don't mean that in a dramatic way, but it's fine if there are disagreements because you all care, you all give a shit, like you're all working towards the common goal of trying to get the band to be the best it can be. So, you know, it makes total sense when you say that.
You know, it's a very personal thing writing a song, you know, and particularly when you've all got your certain bits and you're putting into it. So, yeah, you know, that it's difficult sort of doing that collaboratively. I mean, you know, the bulk of the writing and the riffage definitely comes from, you know, Eddie. And yeah, just the process of writing I find is really interesting because, you know, as you know, historically Eddie and Joe have lived together and so, you know, whip up a lot of the demos together. And so, yeah, it's just the writing process. There is something so magical about that, where it's like when it all comes together, we've all added our different parts. And yeah, it's not just a case that, you know, Joe will do drums and, you know, Eddie will just do singing and guitar. Like, we will all give suggestions for each other, which I do also really enjoy, because, you know, when you're playing the instrument in the band, you're an expert, but you're also, you know, you're blinded by, you know, your own biases and things like that. So it's really good to have outside perspectives to, you know, sometimes help you realize when something isn't going to work.
Right. And Eddie and Joe, when you guys demo, how fully formed are these demos? Because there's a lot of artists that like to go into the studio or go into a writing session with really fleshed out, developed demos. Other people, it's more just, it could literally be like them humming into their voice notes on their phone. How do you guys play it?
Well, we normally have a few different stages of it because we've converted an old bedroom into a sort of little quiet practice sort of space where we can get some rough drum recordings or whatever, and just do it like that. So normally it's as soon as I've got an idea of a song in my head, we'll get something down as a rough demo, and then we'll
or
add
even
to
just
that.
A jam. Like, yeah, Eddie will usually say, "Look, I've got this riff," and then we'll just play it. And then if the energy's right, then it kind of just goes from there. And like, then we'll bring it to Luca in the studio and we'll play it really loud, like how it might be live. And then, you know, things just start to like, it just starts to make shape up.
That's when the structure starts coming in. You know, we'll usually it's like sort of a middle ground. We'll have like most of the parts and like a rough order, and Joe will have like, a sick, but like a rough beat. And then like, as it comes into the loud practices, you know, we start to, you know, I put my bass line in, we start to get the fills and, you know, all the little drum bits sorted. And yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, start with vocals. But I think one thing that does make Honey Badger a bit different is the sort of focus on instrumentation. It's not that lyrics comes second, but, you know, the thing at the forefront, the thing that really drives us is, you know, the feeling that the song gives us when you just hear it. You know, what do the chords and, you know, those sounds, you know, say to you? You know, and that's also, you know, a big part of it. And the lyrics come from that rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I hear you. And I want to get onto the riffs in a sec, because that's definitely the main thing that I'd associate with you guys. You know, that's the forefront of your sound, and you've got really creative riffs. But I don't think you're giving yourselves enough credit for Eddie's melodies. The melodies are insane. Like, if we're talking about Wacker, like, and hear what you're saying, like the falsettos you hit and stuff, I'm like, dude, like, strip that back, take just an acoustic guitar and sing those melodies. They're actually beautiful melodies. So where are your influences creeping in when it comes to sort of crafting melodies and going down that side?
Well, yeah, from lots of places, like what you said, Queens of the Stone Age, they pretty much mastered that really gritty, heavy riffs with just beautiful stuff over the top. And I've tried to incorporate sort of elements of that into it. I also grew up on a lot of Jack White, whatever project he was in, I was listening to. So, yeah, that sort of stuff.
That makes sense, actually, that you say that you're a fan of Jack White, because, like, he's quite unpredictable with his melodies. Like, you know, he's playing a riff or he's playing a song and you're like, okay, the melody might go like that, and it's never what you think. So it's cool that you bring that in. So when it comes to the riffs, like, again, is it the likes of Queens of the Stone Age that you guys listen to? Do you guys tend to listen to some heavier stuff for riffs, like, I don't know, the Rage Against the Machines, the Audio Slaves of the World? Is it other stuff? Where do you source all that sort of inspiration?
Well, no, not too much of the heavy stuff.
You know, the first Rage album, though, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the artists mentioned, but Eddie's definitely right. You know, I think all of us as a group, we're not as big into, like, you know, for example, metal. And like, you know, hardcore, you know, I think there's a really good hardcore scene in Brighton, so it's nice going to see that live. But yeah, I mean, there's you know, we all like the sort of grit of the earlier Frank Carter and the Rattlesnake.
Oh, wicked.
Stuff. I have to say the earlier sound now, unfortunately.
Right, okay.
If you've heard the most recent album.
See, I love it, dude, but
oh, no.
I'm with you. The earlier stuff is, it's punk. It's punk.
Yeah.
I still remember that, the gig, me and it. Was it Reading we saw him?
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
the biggest circle pit I've ever seen. He made everyone run around the edge of the tent.
He got everyone to like exit through one exit, like on one side, go all the way around on the outside yeah, yeah. of the tent. And it's like, yeah. you know, the whole stage, it was a secret set. It was brilliant. It was like everyone came in through the other side and it was just crazy.
Absolute showman, isn't he? Absolute showman. And you, that must inspire you guys as well when it comes to like crafting a live set and kind of engaging with the crowd.
Of course, yeah. We were, well, I can't remember what age, but we were a lot younger when we saw that gig, and just something like that to a young person who really wants to do that. It's just, yeah, it's brilliant. It's great to see.
Amazing. You mentioned, Luca, the Brighton scene. What's that like for the sort of thing that you guys are doing? So we're not talking so much hardcore stuff, but more rock, more alternative. What's it like?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, you know, I myself have been struggling a bit financially recently, so I haven't been going out as much as I'd like to. But, you know, Eddie and Joe have been going down to so many of the gigs recently. And, you know, even, you know, going back, you know, I'm, as someone that like likes rock and, you know, recognises it isn't one of the more popular genres these days, especially in our age group, it is really nice to sort of have that scene in Brighton where people are fucking into it. There's loads of interesting, you know, bands on the scene. And loads and loads of really cool people. Like, it's really rare to find like a bunch of dickheads in the Brighton scene. You know, there are always going to be some, but you know, I feel like it's obviously quite a small scene because it's a small city, but it's good vibes. I mean, what do you guys think?
Big family though. Small scene, big family. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it is very such a supportive community in Brighton. I feel like, you know, if you're in a band and you're from Brighton, you go to all local gigs, you know, and everyone supports each other, and you see that, and it's so nice to see, really. I mean, yeah, just getting that support in your own like city, it's really nice.
Is there a core venue in Brighton? Because I saw you guys were playing Dalston's. That's on the horizon at the end of the month. Is that like sort of one of the main venues? Because you're going to have to educate me here because I'm totally unfamiliar with the Brighton scene, which is shocking, really, because there's so many great artists that come from that way.
Dalton's is a bit newer. Especially in the scene that we're kind of in, I'd not heard of it much until this year, really. But I think the
it's
main
up and
one,
coming,
yeah,
it's just reopened. It's just like, you know, it was called something else before, and now it's just been reopened. I think, you know, in terms of the Brighton scene, we haven't played there as much, but Hope and Ruin is a core, like especially with rock.
Great
like
name as central. Well, Hope and Ruin.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's another one in London, but yeah, it's a sick name. It's sick vibes. We've only played there once, and actually Eddie was under 18 at the time. And we found out on the day, literally like it was hours before the gig, that we had to leave after our set, which was a bit annoying. But other core venues, I think Green Door, especially for rock, like they've got a really good vibe. Loads and loads of bands come through there. It's not too hard to get on the bill, but there's, you know, still high quality. And, you know, there was one year where we must have played there like 10 times or something. Rossi Bar is a newer one, but is sort of opened and under the wing of the Green Door people. And that's become also, I think, quite a key part of that scene. It's a really cheap and cheerful one. It's like a 60 cap downstairs, absolute wet box. I think the Rossi Bar's grown. And we've also played the Pipeline, which is another sweat box. Again, like 60, 70 cap. But loads of bands, you know, that are smaller and up and coming, or just maybe haven't been around as long, come through there. And I think, I mean, maybe there are some others that stand out to you lads, but I think for me, like, those are the three that sort of spring to mind when I think key Brighton venues.
the sweat boxes are the ones you want, right? That's where your sound's right at home.
Yeah, man. But yeah, I think the staff like shared through Green Door, Rossi Bar and Dalton's in some way. I think they share a lot of staff, which is good because like you see familiar faces, you know, just working there at all these venues, and it is really like, you know, solidifies what I was saying about it being one big family in Brighton. You can't beat it.
Talk to me about Wacker. The reason I say that, I understand, you know, you bought out Spell It Out since, which again I love, but Wacker was the track that really turned me on to you guys and what you do, and then I've gone and listened to your other stuff since. So that's the song I'd like to play on this podcast. Talk to me about how that came about, because obviously you've got that quite angular riff that comes in at the start, that, you know, it's I want to say it's kind of Queens of the Stone Age-y. It's quite stoner rocky, you know. It's it feels really kind of reminiscent of the 90s and that sort of sound. So how did all that come around?
Well, funny you should say, actually. I was, around the time I was listening to it, I was playing around with a lot of open tunings on my guitar and listening to the Them Crooked Vultures album on
repeat. How, yes.
And just, it just came from that. Just looping in my brain, just on the open guitar, and that I don't know. It just felt I don't know. Can't really explain it, but yeah,
it feels like a waltz or a swagger, doesn't it? It's got like bluesy tones as well. I think, I don't know. It gives me a good insight into what's going on in your head, I think, a little bit. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we love playing that tune. It's one of our slower ones, but I think, you know, our set needs that. We do put it in, you know, around the middle. It's a good kind of swagger tune.
It's got that weird, you know, bluesy swing to it that really, like, you know, the groove is so interesting on that song. And like, you know, it's a tricky one for me to play because it's in open G. And so the riff that Eddie plays really easily with open strings, that I've sort of got to do quite a bit to maintain. So it's, it always feels that I'm trying to find the best way to put it. It's, again, it feels like you're sort of wrestling with that beast, that, you know, that powerful riff, because it's just, you know, only shows up a couple of times in the song as well, that opening riff, but, you know, again, it sort of, it punches through all the more.
I'm gonna have to go down the route of nerdy guitar / bass chat here, because you talk about open G and I've never used that tuning. I've used like open C before, C G C G C E. I've used like quite a lot of like open D. Open G, that's new territory for me. So was there a certain artist that uses that, that you heard them use it? Maybe you were learning a tab or something and you wanted to tap into that?
Yeah, it was all the old bluesy White Stripes stuff, because obviously, yeah, massive fan of Jack White. He would be using it for, like, I can't remember the earlier albums. Like, I remember the songs I was learning would be, well, Little Bird. Do you know that tune?
I've not heard Little Bird, no.
Oh, well, it's like a slide. I used to love playing with a slide on open tunings, but with open G, it's open from the, what would be the A string up. So you still got like that The A and the E and A are the same. Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's painful having to listen to him explain this sometimes. Yeah, none of us are really, you know, we never really got into revising the whole theory kind of thing.
Far from scholars on the subject, I must say. Know your sketches, don't forget to
Joe, what's your inspiration drumming wise? Like, give me some of your favorite drummers. Because I'm not a drummer, by the way. I'm absolutely shit and I can't play for shit. But I'm one of them that, like, when I hear a good drummer, I'm really obsessed. And I'm like, how are they that good? And I listen to them really intently.
Well, I mean, it's basic, but obviously the two main ones are going to be Grohl and Bonham. I can't get over, you know, that sound. I don't know, when I hear Eddie's tunes, when we bring them to, like, when we come together to play them or jam them, I always want to be, like, I want the fat sound, you know, I want it to be full, I want it to be driving, I just want it to be go, 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 and I want that to kind of come through so that people can almost be driven themselves, and, like, you know, if they're going to have a dance, the drums are going to be, you know, part of the thing that's driving them to move, you know.
For sure. And I totally get that, because as great as Stuart Copeland is, I love the guy, I love the drummer. It would sound weird if you started doing all the, like, like all the weird techie cymbal bits. Everyone would be like, yeah, what's going on? Yeah. You've just got to hit it hard.
Yeah. I think the thing is, we're all fairly quiet and we're all a little bit on the shyer side. I think when we play live, like, we all really come out and we kind of go wild with it a little bit. I can't really think of a better release, to be honest. We all really come out of our shells on stage, so
it's fun. It's, you know, having that connection with the crowd and, like, everyone just being there for the same thing to just have a good time and listen to some fucking sick tunes. And yeah, Joe's drumming is just insane. I mean, as a bassist, you know, it's just, I've played with a few drummers, and I've played with, you know, probably more technically skilled drummers, you know, if you can believe it. But yeah, Joe, you know, far and away, you know, I click with the best, and, you know, it's just got that absolute ferocity again, like, you know, matching Eddie on the guitar. That's like, you know, it just feels like you're being blown away. It feels like some huge cannons and they're just going off in yeah. It's such a wonder to play with Joe, like, as a bassist. It really is.
Oh, mate, kind words. We love to hear that. Guys, a big part of this podcast for me is, you know, it's a podcast for the unsigned under the radar community, about the unsigned under the radar community. And, you know, it's really exciting, and there's loads of artists like yourselves out there doing amazing things and absolutely crushing it. But let's be honest, like, being an artist is difficult. And I think, you know, a lot of people from outsiders looking in see all the glitz You know, they see the shows, they say, oh, you're traveling to this place and doing a gig. But the reality of it's difficult. Something I speak to my brother about, because he's an artist, is, you know, like he's holding down a job and the money he's earning from that is going back into his craft and what he's doing. Are you guys in that position yourselves where, like, you know, you're kind of, it can be a real struggle trying to juggle everything? And what are some of the difficulties that you stumble across?
Well, we've got quite a good side hustle going on at the moment, me and Eddie. We're doing gardening at the moment. We're doing that, a lot of that. And that's kind of what we're using to fund everything, really, at the moment. And it works out all right, because we'll do the gardening in the day and we'll do the gigs at night. So it works out pretty well for us.
You know, I've sort of been working for a couple of years. You know, I've moved out as well. So I've managed to find a decent balance where, you know, I can earn enough to, you know, have a few nice things. But, you know, most important thing is, you know, that we can, you know, back out all, you know, any honey badger gig that we need to. It's a bit of a tough balance, because, yeah, it's also not, you know, especially at our level, you know, not amazingly paid. And again, because you're in that sort of investment stage and there's not much returns at this point, it's a bit of a slow start. But, you know, we're hoping that over the next couple of years, you know, we've got some merch now, which we're starting to take to gigs, which we've been, you know, lacking on for a while. But the shirts that we've got are such high quality. Like, I'll back them till the day I die. And the guy that did it was...
I'll go grab one.
Yes.
Please do.
Go and grab one now.
Show me. Please tell me your Spell It Out artwork is on there, your Wacker artwork is on there, because that is punk. It's like a mixture between, like, I feel like it's part graffiti, it's part, like, manga, it's all over the shop. It's so cool. It's really visceral. Please tell me that's on there.
It is one of those. It's not either of the singles you mentioned, though. It's the Back Home.
Right.
It's the same artist, but yeah, same style, same art.
Look at that, man. Because there's so much bad merch out there. I would, irrespective of whether you guys were, you know, of whether I was a fan of you as an artist or not, whether I knew that was a band tee or not, I'd buy that. That's the thing. Like, it genuinely, it's good in its own right. And that's what you want.
Oh, yeah, that's what we want to hear, really, isn't it?
We were really lucky to, you know, have Tom. I mean, he's a good mate of me and Joe's from school days as well. And, you know, our sort of, like, mantra has always been that, like, you know, we really care about, you know, the art that goes into it, you know, all the singles, you know, all the albums, like, you know, when we get to work with an animator, there's something or you know, someone that does or has, like, a really unique style. You know, there's something so special about that, and it elevates both pieces of art. And, you know, you help bring exposure to this person, help them get to do what they love. And, you know, obviously they get some money for it. And, you know, we get this, you know, amazing piece of art, which, again, I think fits to the Honey Badger vibe. It's crazy. It's, you know, it's breaking out. It's really weird, but in like, you know, a super visually striking way. And so, yeah, just, you know, shout outs to Tom Yelland, you know, big ups. Is it at Graphux on Instagram? GRAPHUCKS, I believe.
Graphux.
Yeah.
Big up Tom Yolland. Yeah, Tom Yolland. He's done a great job. I mean, from what I can see on camera, that looks amazing.
We love that boy. Yeah, we're really close with him. And he's got a mad brain. You can really see like into his head when he puts his pen on the paper. You can see everything he's thinking.
But that's part of it, right? Like, any external collaborators you work with, be it a producer, an artist, management, pluggers, whoever it is, you want them to share your vision. You know, that's a huge part of it. And it sounds like he does, right?
Mm. Well, yeah. We wouldn't be best mates with him if, you know, he wasn't. So, but yeah, he's in New Zealand at the moment. So he kind of just ran away. Not going to lie. He's run away. He's left everything behind him in a way. So he's not doing the next load of artworks because he's, you know, he's kind of, yeah, getting away for a bit. But he'll be back.
So are you actively looking for people, this could be your chance to give a shout out to weird, zany artists out there.
We love it. We love the scratchy art. I mean, if anyone sent us anything, we'd be, you know, we'd be honoured. You know, no one's really done that for us before, I think. But we've always like had that connection with the artist. Sorry, Joe, stop me if I'm wrong.
I was just gonna say, you know, even if it's like not for the single, just send us art. Like, we want to see that. It's cool. We want to see, you know, what's inside, you know, everyone's heads, what's going on. Like, art is the best way of showing that. So just send it anyway.
Yeah. Visual or audio. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all part of the same thing. And yeah, I personally, you know, I follow loads of art accounts on my Instagram. You know, I'm absolutely crap at drawing. You know, I couldn't draw to save my life, which is annoying. Otherwise, I'd probably be doing loads of Honey Badger stuff. But yeah, it's a really tricky craft, and you know, I just love finding unique artists that, like, you know, are doing something, you know, that's different and, like, you know, really in, you know, in your face and out there.
I can't not talk about this, and before I forget, you guys at the end of the month are you're going to that Dalton's venue, and am I right in saying you're competing in like a heat against other bands, against other artists to end up at Bloodstock? Explain what's going on there, because this is exciting.
Going to be one of the strangest gigs we've ever played, probably. We've never played a gig with a judge panel before. It's a bit intimidating.
We did a Battle of the Bands back in the day, but, like, you know, that was sort of a bit proto Honey Badger. You know, we were still all quite young. And yeah, the Metal to the Masses thing, you know, it really intrigued me because, again, I'm not a big fan of metal, but, you know, I've had a lot of people, you know, who are sort of into that heavier side of rock, you know, come to me and say, you know, that they really rate what we've done with the sound. And, you know, I think I'm just really excited to show, you know, obviously get the boys and the girls and everyone else down. But, you know, I'll mostly be excited to, you know, play to, you know, a whole new crowd and a whole new set of people and just see what they have to think. You know, I mean, even if I might not agree with it, you know, I'm really interested to, you know, to do that and, you know, have that experience.
I mean, how does it work? Do you get given like a set amount of songs or a certain set length and then you turn up, do your thing? The next band, they set up, do their thing, and then at the end, the judges go, "Yeah, you're through to the next round." Is that how it works?
I couldn't tell you, mate. I think we're just gonna turn up, we're gonna do our thing, and if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I think it's just gonna be some good fun, really. Interesting to see what people think.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was put onto it by the organizer who works at the same place that I do. And yeah, it was a really nice opportunity, and I'm excited to see what people think of us. You know, we're gonna just do a really gritty, grungy set. So, you know,
yes,
I you know, and the rest of the band, we love that sort of softer side. Like you were saying earlier with the falsettos, you know, there's that perfect contrast sometimes of, you know, having that softer, you know, ethereal like sound, and then it just coming into this insane, like, you know, heavy stuff. So yeah, I really want to know what the people think.
Yeah, the people will like it. I'm putting it out there into the universe. I'm manifesting it. I love it. Talk to me about the future.
We've got lots coming up and lots to share with people.
We've got an EP on the way. It will be out this year. So that's, you know, a big first for us. We've done EPs before, but it was proto Honey Badger, where, again, Eddie sounded it was before his voice had broken, and we found a sound, but it wasn't this Honey Badger sound. And, you know, like I was saying, you know, it's not going to be the same as Honey Badger's sound, you know, in a year's time. But, you know, what we've got is, you know, we've been playing it live, and it's been the ones that people have been saying are their favorites and the standouts. So, you know, we're really happy to get these ones, you know, out there, to, you know, so people can listen outside of the gigs, really.
I would say, yeah, proudest I've been of all of us yet. And I think these are our most mature sounds, probably.
Amazing. I'd love to hear that. I'd love a song recommendation off each of you for just anyone listening right now to be like, oh, I'm going to go and check that out. I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. Feel free to get your phones out and go for anything you've been streaming. But like, I'd love a song recommendation off each of you for people to go and see what they think.
Well, I'd probably have to say Let's Shake Hands, The White Stripes. Or, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Nick Drake actually recently. I've just got onto him.
I've heard, it's not just you, Eddie, I've heard so many people mention Nick Drake to me. Quite a few friends listen to Nick Drake. You've just mentioned him. I've never listened to him, and I feel like by all accounts I'd be a fan.
Riverman, if I had to pick one of his.
I've got two, I'm going to say. I mean, the first one is just because we recently found out Neil Young is back on Spotify. So, yeah, I was listening to Revolution, Blues this morning. And the second one is, have you heard of Ty Segall? Or Ty Segall, some people say.
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, I would say he's in loads of bands, loads of sounds. He does everything, you know, nice stuff, trashy stuff, super fast stuff. But anyway, he's in a band. Is he in this band? Gogs.
Yeah,
Gogs is one of his bands, and the song's Killing Time, and that is just Killing Time, yeah, by Gogs, and that will kind of give you an insight into kind of where I like the energy from a song and how I can put that into my drums and stuff like that. So
amazing. Luca, what we got, mate?
I'm throwing a curveball.
It's going to be something wild now, like Shakira, Hips Don't Lie.
No, it's not. Eddie and Joe are going to hate me, but my personal, one of my favourite artists at the moment in the UK is a rap artist called Denzel himself. Yeah, Denzel himself.
Denzel himself. I thought you were going to say Denzel Curry. Right, Denzel himself. Okay.
Denzel Curry is hard, though. We're not slagging off Denzel Curry. But Denzel himself, if you will not find a more original, weird, creative, like just super cool artist. The song I would recommend is Goth Pressure, which has quite a jokes video as well. And I've met him a few times. He's really, really certy person. And again, like, the music's nothing like you've heard. Most people that listen to it probably won't like it, but it's like one of those things where you gotta hear it just for the artistry. Eddie and Joe, not big fans, but
I appreciate his originality.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it. That's exactly. Very gentle.
Very diplomatic.
Yeah. Guys, last up, if there's anyone listening now who wants to start a band, because there's so many people that can play, but maybe, you know, they're overthinking starting a band, because it is quite a big thing that you're going into. Or it can feel like that at the start. What would your advice be to anyone trying to make it as a band? I understand you guys are in the same boat, but from what you've picked up along the way, you know, what advice would you give someone?
Fucking do it. Fucking do it. Because, I mean, you're saying, you know, what advice would you give someone who wants to make it? And, like, you know, we always kind of sometimes we think that, you know, how do you define that? What is making it? And I think,
like, well, yeah, your version of success, whatever that is. Yeah,
exactly. Even if it's just like, you know, your first ever gig, like a pub gig with like five people in a room, you've made it. You're playing music to five people in a pub. Like, let's go. Like, do you know what I mean? Fucking do it.
I think another important thing is, like, you know, having the right people. You know, it can be difficult. You know, some people's hearts aren't always in it. That's never an issue we've had with Honey Badger. We're such a tight unit that there's just so many issues that like a band starting out might have. But you know, we are so tightly locked in that, you know, we've been together as a band for, you know, at least 7 years. Joe and Eddie, you know, a couple of years before that. And it's because, you know, we all really like each other and we're all really passionate for the music. So, you know, that's the key thing, is you've got to do it, but you've also, if you're in a band, the other people have got to do it as well. And that's never an issue in Honey Badger. You know, we're all always, like, you know, just banging it out of the park. And that's one of the joys of being in the band. You know, and I'm not sure if the others have even been in any other bands. I've only been in one other myself, but yeah, you've just got to do it as well. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, your mind will tell you not to do. But, you know, I used to have really bad stage fright, and, you know, I think Joe and Eddie might be the same. I used to stand like straight like a stick. I always thought if I could do it, anyone can. You know, you just got to take a belief and you just got to let go and then, you know, just do as best you can. And, you know, if you're passionate about it, the results will follow.